Are you a design pro looking for qualified options for your custom upholstery and case pieces? Meet my friends at Slant Studios. Smart and talented, perfect for residential or commercial projects. An additional discount is yours when you use www.bit.ly/slant-mdd. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Million Dollar Decorating, the only podcast devoted to the worlds of design, decorating, and beautiful living. I'm your host, James Swan, and I am thrilled to have you subscribing to our show today. Remember, you can bounce over to our website, milliondollardecorating.com, to learn more about our family of design enthusiasts. Add your name to our email list while you're there, and then follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. We'll keep you updated on all the fun things we have going on. And the really amazing thing that we have going on right now is that I get to introduce you to our guest today. He writes the blog Past Imperfect, The Art of Inventive Repairs, which chronicles his world-renowned collection of antique ceramics with inventive repairs, also known as make-dos. His collection was featured in a cover story in the New York Times Home and Garden section. He is an expert on the subject and has lectured in the U.S. and abroad. His lifelong passion for collecting and selling antiques began at a very early age and continues to inspire his design work today. For over 20 years, he's worked as a designer, decorator, and stylist on diverse film and television projects, including The Nanny Diaries, Eat, Pray, Love, The Americans, Gotham, and The Normal Heart, working with notable directors like Ryan Murphy, Bill Condon, Jane Campion, as well as others. In 2003, he founded his own interior design firm, specializing in upscale residential interiors, creating luxurious homes for clients in the visual arts, including film and theatrical producers, fashion designers, and others. He is the author of The Scarf, published by Stuart Torobi and Chang, the classic illustrated art book chronicling the history of the printed scarf that reflects both his expertise and love of textiles. He blogs, he designs, and he's always making the world more beautiful. Andrew Baseman, welcome to Million Dollar Decorating.
Thanks, James. I'm thrilled to be here.
Good to have you. So take us back. What was it like picking up that first antique piece and knowing that it was something you wanted to begin to collect?
Well, I was very lucky. I was born into a home of antique collectors and dealers. My parents started collecting in their 20s, and by the time my brother and I were born, they were well into schlepping around the city, buying and selling, and at an early age started to bring us around to flea markets and antique shows. And I think when I was very young, I mean, this started when I was probably 3 or 4, I was maybe not so into it, but eventually they would set us up with some small things to sell, and we got right into it. I think that some of the passers-by would see us and thought we were cute and would buy the little things we were selling. And then eventually, when I was about 8 or 9, I started to collect stamps and then postcards, and then I really became an avid collector.
So when you say collector, you're talking serious, buying, trading, upgrading, all of it.
I was, and since my parents had a shop, I could sell things that I found. So I did a little dumpster diving back in my time. On the way to school, I would find things that the neighbors were throwing out that were antiques. I don't know why they were throwing out antiques, but I guess they didn't have room for them. And so I would very eagerly gather them up and clean them up and sell them in my parents' shop. And eventually I would sell. And I liked the idea of making a little extra money. And soon after, became very serious collecting postcards. I became a member of the Deltiology Club. That's what postcard collecting is called.
Deltiology. Okay, you've got to pronounce that one more time for me.
Deltiology.
Deltiology. Okay. New term
so,
today.
So I was a young Deltiologist, and I was living in Massachusetts at the time, and I was a member of the Bay State Postcard Collectors Club, and my father would drive me to Boston from the Berkshires where we were living. And I would display my postcards and enter them in competitions. And so I was very much into, at that point, art-related postcards. And these were not typically postcards that you would buy when you went on vacation that you find today. These were turn of the century, beautifully printed, lithographed, and just European postcards, greeting cards, that kind of thing. And so you would display them and exhibit by category. And so I just had an interest at a very early age in really beautiful art postcards.
Wow, that sounds fascinating. I imagine you saw literally hundreds, if not thousands, of images.
I did, and I still have many of the postcards today still mounted in albums. And every once in a while, I'll look through them, and they'll inspire me in my design work. So I'm just so thrilled that something that started at such an early age carries through today.
Now, at what point did you transition to ceramics? Because you're quite well known for that ceramic collection.
The ceramics came much later, into my probably late 20s. I always admired the ceramics we had in our house. My parents had Japanese and Chinese export ware and English pottery displayed in two cabinets. And I remember just being so interested in the designs and the shapes. And one particular piece had staple repairs, which, if you're not familiar with that, the first time you see it can be quite startling. Back in the time before adhesives and glues were used to repair broken ceramics and glassware, you would take your broken piece to a china mender. And for cracks, they would use staples, metal staples, that looked like they come out of a staple gun, but they were actually hand-forged out of rods of steel and copper and other metals and made into little clips that would be primarily used on the backs of the plates. And they would drill through the surface with a diamond tip drill, a bow drill, that was manually used. And then these tiny staples were clipped onto the plate, and they held it together. And when they were done right, as most of these were, they were watertight. And we're talking about 17th century. These repairs went back so far that there's still, a lot of them are still watertight today. So it was an incredible, I would say, an art form of repairing broken ceramics that really startle people, because it's, I don't even think it could be done today. Because
I'm trying to imagine it. It's incredibly complex, and then to achieve a result of watertightness on top of all of it, that's amazing.
It really is. And when you see the pieces, I focus on those in my collecting. And when you see a piece and hold it, it is just remarkable that ceramics can be held together with metal staples.
Goodness. Wow. I've learned two new things today. So the collection grows. You're now a little older, you've at this point decided that design is where you're headed with your career?
How did that unfold? I had an early interest in theater. And by the time I was in high school, I was directing and designing our school shows. And went to school for set design. And I studied set and costume design and have a degree in it. Came to New York, started doing it, and then ended up morphing into television and movie set decoration, which is what I do now. And so it just developed into that. And I like to use a lot of antiques and a lot of ceramics, mm-hmm. not surprisingly, yeah. in my decoration and my design work. So it all just comes together.
How beautiful. So you were fully prepared when those first projects started rolling in then?
Well, I'm lucky with my background in antiques, because there's so many ways to decorate a room. And when I'm doing it for clients, I like to encourage them to use antiques. And when I'm working on a play, a movie, a TV series, again, if the script just says so-and-so's apartment, it doesn't go into the details of how it's furnished. And I just like to bring my own interest of decorating with antiques and vintage, and not just having everything be modern and new and right out of a store, a contemporary store. So I always find there's a way to bring interest by having many layers and different elements in there.
And clearly it's well received. You've got quite a roster of directors that are responding very positively to your work.
Yes, thankfully they are, and producers as well. And as a matter of fact, I ended up doing some interior design commissions for producers and directors from the work I did on their projects. So that ended up very favorable for me.
And is that what prompted the actually opening of your own design studio?
Yes, it did. I was working on The Nanny Diaries, and one of the producers liked my work, and I ended up doing his house, which led to other producers. And going back to my theater contacts, I did some work for Broadway producers, and it just it turned into a full-time operation, which is very exciting for me.
That's thrilling. And so you're based in New York and work all over the country? Is that how it works?
Luckily, I don't go too far. I like my home life, and I get to work mostly in the New York metropolitan area.
Wonderful. Then, in the middle of all of that, you write a blog.
Right. The blog actually was a result of the downturn in the economy when things slowed down a little. And I was looking at what was turning into a very large collection of my make-dos and realized, you know, I need to catalog these because they were sitting on my shelves, and I have hundreds of them, and they do take up, they are not taking over my house or my apartment, I'm happy to say, but they are, they're on my shelves and in cabinets. And so I thought it would be great to start taking pictures of them and really cataloging them and doing more in intensive research and just getting as much in depth as I can with them. And as I took the pictures, I thought, wow, these really hold together nicely. No one's ever really shown these before. And wouldn't it be great to do a blog and to post an image a week and just see what the response would be? So I started to do that and discovered that people were fascinated by them. It took a little while for it to catch on, but as it did, I was surprised by how many people were responding, and I was posting not only on my blog but on Facebook and then eventually Instagram, and just it was really exciting to share this with the world. As it turns out, with Instagram and Facebook, you really are, it's limitless. The world, everybody in the world can see these.
It's fascinating, isn't it, how far that the reach is of those social media platforms.
And so immediate, too.
Right. And so the blog continues. Your followers clearly are interested in antiques. Is it just ceramics that you find their interest focused on, or do their interest vary?
Well, that's a really good point, and that was something that took me by surprise. At first, it really was just antique dealers who were interested, because the bulk of the pieces I have are antiques and very early antiques, anywhere from the 17th century to the 20th century. And the antique dealers were responsive. Some were skeptical. So just because when I would go into an antique shop and say, do you have any broken antiques? They were like, of course not. Everything in our shop is perfect. Why would you ask that? And then when I told them why, they were still a little curious why I was interested in repaired antiques. They thought that I wanted to take the repairs out and do a blind repair that's done today, where you can, because of the sophistication of repairs, you can take out the old staples or metal handles or any of the other things that I love and do a blind repair and sell it as perfect. And that, of course, horrifies me, because the whole point is the pieces I collect have survived hundreds of years the way they are. They're unique. And by removing the old repairs, it just loses all integrity. So what I discovered was ceramicists and ceramic artists were finding me, and they were fascinated and wanted to know how to repair their own pieces, because I discovered that contemporary ceramics, and I guess going back in time, there's a large percentage of loss when pieces are made and fired. Any time between that process of creation and completion, pieces break. So in the kiln, pieces break. When they take them out of the kiln before, and many of these artists would just throw the pieces away. And it turns out I discovered that in meeting these people, they said that I gave them permission to repair their damaged pieces in interesting and unique ways that they didn't know existed. So by seeing the old repairs on my pieces, they were inspired to create new ones, and not just staples, but wooden handles, wooden lids, metal handles and spouts and teapots. It just goes on and on. And it's so exciting now to see contemporary pieces done in the old style and even beyond.
Wow, a completely unexpected side journey for the blog, right?
It was very exciting. And since then, I've contacted a lot of these ceramicists, and I've done exhibits of their pieces side by side with the antique ones.
Really?
And it's really fascinating to see how the inspiration came about and to see how pieces were done in the old style and how they're done today.
Wow. It's like worlds colliding, right?
It is. And everybody wins because it brings a new appreciation to the old and a new audience. And then it makes it current, which is, of course, you know, we want to go forward with this.
Of course. Yeah. So do you see a surge in interest in ceramics in general then? Is that what's fueling the growth of that portion of your business?
It is. I'm happy to say that ceramics has really taken off, and it helps me and my cause. And I recently had an exhibit at the New York Ceramics and Glass Fair in New York, which prompted a mention in the New York Times article on the exhibit. And the fair used to be just antiques. It was dealers from around the world with the most incredible antique pieces, and then slowly more contemporary examples would show up. And I think the past 2 years they've included glassware. And when the New York Times wrote an article for this fair this past January, the entire article was about repaired antiques and less than perfect, and included me, which I was thrilled about, and the other ceramicists who had been incorporating the new repairs into their pieces.
Congratulations. That's some great visibility for you there.
Yeah, it was very exciting. And the dealers who are now representing ceramicists rather than antique dealers, it's very exciting for them as well.
Good for you and good for the entire industry of ceramicists. You can't buy advertising like that, can you?
No, not at all.
Well, now let's stay focused on that for a moment, because our listeners at home are working hard to create beauty in their homes. People rely on blogs for any number of sources of inspiration, ideas, influences in their homes. Andrew, if you could speak directly to every design enthusiast in the country today, what would your message be to them and why?
Well, apropos of what I've already said, and I can talk further about it, is I would encourage them to buy antiques. I think that there are so many beautiful pieces of all periods and styles out there that are sometimes more affordable than new, retain their value, if not appreciated in value, unlike when you buy even a new car. The minute you take it out of the dealership, it's worth less money. So antiques are more unique. It's a way of recycling. It's probably the earliest form of recycling. And I think that by mixing old and new, it just makes for a much more interesting environment.
You're preaching to the choir here. Absolutely. But it's a message that is well to be repeated. So I hope our listeners are taking notes and heading out to buy some antiques this weekend. It's a good weekend to do it. Let's turn this around and talk about you for a second and maybe your home. Do you have a favorite room in your home, Andrew?
I do. I have a house upstate, which is in the middle of nowhere, which I like. After working a long week in the city, we escape up to the house, and my office is probably my favorite room. It's filled with my books. I collect antique books, I collect research books, children's books. I've always loved books. My father actually had a bookstore when I grew up, but my love was even before that. So I have my collections up there, and it's just it's on the second floor. It overlooks a 100-plus-year-old apple tree, and we've got a sprawling yard, and I can often see rabbits and groundhogs and deer out my window. So it really is a room that I relax in and allows me to do my writing and just to feel totally at ease.
Wow. I don't think I would leave. It sounds very appealing.
It's hard to.
What would people be surprised to find in your home, Andrew?
That's a good question. I think that I ended up a few years ago amassing a pretty large collection of antique fabric sample books from Japan. They were put together by kimono makers in the probably mid to late 1800s. And I got so obsessed, I ended up with dozens and dozens of these. And each book contains hundreds of samples of beautiful silk and cotton. And I ended up using them in my design. I would design rugs for clients and use these little swatches for color ideas and even some of the patterns. So it may not be so surprising, but just the sheer quantity of them is not quite the norm.
It sounds completely fascinating. I could see myself spending hours just pouring over it.
It could be a whole other blog. There's so many of them. I could do a swatch a day for the next 100 years.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Because you need one more thing to do, right?
I do.
Now, let's go sort of to a worst-case scenario, and maybe for a collector this is a particularly difficult question, but God forbid there be a fire. What's the one thing? Loved ones and animals are all safe, but what's the one thing that you would tempt the flames to dash in and save from your home, Andrew?
Well, that is a Sophie's Choice kind of question, and one I don't like to contemplate. I have a lot of art that I love, and one piece in particular is an illustration of Eloise that was drawn for me by the illustrator Hilary Knight, who became a friend after I moved to New York. And I grew up with the book Eloise. I think a lot of kids remember the girl, the naughty girl who lived in the Plaza Hotel, and we had a copy growing up. And I met the illustrator, and he, for one of my birthdays, did a drawing of Eloise actually holding up a scarf. Back in when I did my book on scarves, that was a nice tie-in. So that's one of my favorite pieces.
That would be worth tempting the flames for. I would agree.
The cats.
I'm sorry?
After I rescued the cats.
Anything living is protected in that question.
Okay, good.
We can't have that. We don't want things to turn too sad.
No.
Now let's think happy thoughts for a moment. Let's think about design or style heroes that you may have. If you could be dropped into the closet or the dressing room of a design or style hero of yours, someone that you look up to, living or dead, who would that person be, Andrew?
Well, I'm not sure about going into his closet or dressing room, but I've always been a big fan of Charles Rennie Mackintosh. I had an early love affair with Art Nouveau and Secessionism, and his work has always been a big influence on me. I think I discovered him since maybe senior year in high school or freshman in college. I just love his designs, and recently came back from a trip to Prague and saw some beautiful Art Nouveau there, so I just feel like it's always been something I've been interested in, and I've never been to Scotland. I would love to see his work that still remains, and it'd be great to chat with him and see where the inspiration came from and just get to know him.
Good pick, an amazing artist and craftsman and creator, so sure you'd fill up the time and spend it well being influenced by him. What's the best decorating advice you've ever been given, Andrew?
I'm trying to think of something someone told me. I might have developed this on my own, but I can't think of a specific person who told me this, but I try to not stick strictly to one specific style or even metal finish. I think that when I go into a room and everything matches so perfectly, where every metal finish, if it's brass, it's antique brass, and, you know, God forbid, there'd be one polished brass element in the room, I think that's so boring. So I think that don't be afraid to mix styles and metal finishes and, as I said before, modern furnishings with antiques. I think it's just so much more interesting to mix it all up.
I tend to agree, and I think those are pretty wise words. I hope our listeners at home are jotting that down and being inspired by that. What is something that our listeners at home can do today, Andrew, to make their home more beautiful?
Well, I think that a beautiful home starts with really seeing the beauty in your home and what you have. So I think just tidying up, just clean up what you have, and don't feel bad about parting with the things that you don't love. So maybe just go around your home, and if there's something that maybe it was a gift that you feel pressured to keep or you don't really care for, just put it aside for now. Maybe eventually get rid of it, but really showcase the pieces that you do love, that give you joy, that whenever you see it, it puts a smile on your face. And that doesn't cost any money. I think that you can even make money by selling the things you don't love. So just clean up your place and really showcase the pieces that you really love.
Good advice there. Now, you mentioned a few moments ago that you're a lover of books, also a collector of books. If you had to narrow it down and give us one recommendation, one book that you think should be in every design lover's library, what would it be?
Well, I'm going to have to make a shameless plug for my own book, The Scarf, which is out of print but available in the secondary market. But, of course, that was too cheap of a shot. So I'm going to recommend a book that I didn't write myself, and that would be The Way We Live by Stafford Cliff.
Sure.
It's a massive book filled with photos of interiors from around the world. Mm-hmm. And I gave that out for many years to my clients, my interior design clients. And they really loved seeing, it's not just filled with beautiful pictures of upscale apartments, it's everything around the world. It's just a fascinating book, and I find truly inspiring.
I'm looking at it on my bookshelf right now, and I can attest to the fact that it has many dog-eared pages. I know you're not supposed to do that, dog-eared pages, but I do sometimes.
Okay, I use a removable stick, poster.
Yeah,
or something. Those leave a little sticky, so you got to be careful.
I have friends that have lectured me on that very bad habit of mine, and one day I will purge myself of it. But it's a great book and a great recommendation. We'll put a link to that book along with a link to your book. I think we can find a dealer or two that have copies available. And we'll put those links in the show notes section on the website so people can add those two very important books to their design library and collection. Andrew, we've come down to the end of our time together. Hard to believe that it's flown by so quickly. We end every show with the same question. So I'm going to paint a picture for you and see what your thoughts are on this, okay?
Sure.
Andrew, imagine you woke up tomorrow morning in a brand new world. It's physically identical to the Earth that you know, but you don't know a single soul. You still have all the experience and the knowledge you currently possess. Your food and shelter are taken care of, but your new home is empty. All you have is a laptop, a mobile phone, and about $1,000 in your pocket. What would you do over the next 7 days to begin to decorate your new home?
Well, that is quite a question. I'm going to say I would go to one of my favorite local antique shops where I've been known to find bargains at, and I would buy a well-styled, comfortable sofa that I could sleep on. And then I would, using my laptop and my phone that I still have, I would find a buyer and sell it locally for a profit. And then with the profit, buy another antique to sell for a profit and slowly build up enough furnishings to fill my apartment.
Spoken like a true collector.
And dealer.
And dealer, yes. Maybe more importantly, on the dealer side. Oh, that's great. I love that idea. So you're living with the beautiful things as they pass through your home and making a profit on the whole process. I need to hang out with you more. Some very wise ideas there. Andrew Baseman, thank you so much for spending time with us here at Million Dollar Decorating. This has been a joy.
Thank you, James. It was really fun.
I'm glad you could join us today. I want to thank our listeners for subscribing to the show today. All of this would be for nothing if it weren't for you. So we appreciate your support. We appreciate you sharing the news about the show with your friends. And bounce over to the website, milliondollardecorating.com. That's where you'll catch the notes from today's show. We'll have links to Andrew's website We'll have links to the books, both his and the book The Way We Live that he recommended to us. I know you'll want to pick up copies of that. And while you're there, make sure we have your email address. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. And finally, and most importantly, remember that it's up to you to make your world more beautiful.